Accession number 29959, reel 3.
Yes, I said 12:30, 12:45. Okay. Something like that. They'll hold it for us.
You must just say your name and see if it takes off.
Yes, I am Commander Robert Joseph Tunstall.
Serious? I should be working. This is reel number 3, Commander Tunstall. Now, in the first two reels, we were doing summary of your career. And sort of background.
Yes.
About how you ended up, where you ended up.
Yes.
And things like your family reactions and so forth. Now this reel will do some of the more technical things about your initial training, if that's okay.
Yes.
So the first question I should ask you is where did you do your initial flying training? It was in the UK, wasn't it?
It was in the UK, yes. I'm just going to go to the record. The initial flying training was done at Belfast. From Belfast, the whole group were moved over to Luton Airport, and from there, I suppose about half the course, went to Netheravon, where we did all of our operational flying training up to the point where we then left Netheravon and we were broken up, and I went to Crail in Scotland, and at Crail we were doing dummy deck landings and that type of training, and I was then sent at the end of that period to the Mediterranean. I was supposed to join one of the carriers in the Mediterranean, but unfortunately, just prior to my arrival, the carriers were badly Stuka dive bombed and had to go off to America for refit. So I ended up with the squadrons off the carriers operating ashore in North Africa. The base was at Decayla near Alexandria, but I spent and we were spread out along the north coast there, mostly operating in support of the fleet, places like Martin Bagouche, Sidi Barani and Tobruk. It so happened, quite by chance, it was discovered that my pre-naval background was in engineering, and as a result I was detailed to report to the Fleet Air Technical Officer. I hadn't joined as an engineer because I joined as a pilot, but once they got hold of me, they didn't have a coordinating officer for the six squadrons who were now ashore. They had plenty of jolly good NCOs, but NCOs were attached to their squadron and didn't liaise across the other squadrons. So I was given the job of liaising across the six squadrons and the bases, and as I say, down to Tobruk. I spent a lot of my time flying along the North African coast. I found quite a number of suitable places for landing. They allocated a Fulmer aircraft and a Swordfish to me, and I swapped around depending on the type of place I was going to. And frankly, in the end, I was conducting my own little war, and it wasn't that I was free from aggression. I used to run into all sorts of problems, but somehow I survived, and we had a unit based in Tobruk, and I used to go there quite frequently. An amusing part of this was quite often I was sleeping at night on the desert floor in a blanket, and I was that close to the Germans that I could. They used to tune their radios into Germany at night, and I used to sometimes go to sleep listening to Lili Marleen. But there were some very funny incidents, as well as shooting incidents. I was at one stage flying into Tobruk, and I was nearly there, and all of a sudden I noticed an aircraft. I looked up to my mirror above the cockpit, and there was an aircraft in position, just about the right position to shoot me down. I pulled back very heavily on the stick, went in at the top of stalled at the top of my climb, went into a flat inverted spin, and whilst I was spinning down, this German aircraft came past with a dirty great black cross on its side, and I could see the pilot, and he looked at me. It was rather amusing, this, and he grinned and gave the thumbs up, and I saw him do this, and then he went off. He wasn't sticking around because he was over enemy territory, but I thought that was a rather an amusing incident. And funnily enough, later on in life, when I did meet with men from the German army and who'd served under Rommel after the war, there was no antipathy between us. We realized we were the same sort of chaps on both sides, and we were really political pawns, frankly. But I thought that I should tell that little story. The
Well, I take you back
yes.
to the very start when
yes.
you first got into an aircraft.
Oh, right. Oh, my first aircraft was a Miles Magister.
Uh-huh. Now, had you actually flown during your civilian life before? Or was this going to be the first time that you were going to...
I hadn't flown as a pilot, but I did have it was half a crown, wasn't it, Lum?
In the Isle of Wight.
It was that man who ran a flying circus. And can you remember his name, the flying circus man?
I used to hospital, if you remember.
Yes, that's right. I used to... we used to visit the Isle of Wight. And there was an opportunity to have either half a crown or 5 shilling flight. And when I had this flight, I came down, and my immediate reaction was, that's the life for me. And
you actually put it on a card and said that to me.
Yes.
I was in hospital having this skin graft.
Yes, yeah.
And sent this different card. Just come down out of the blue.
Yes.
That's the life for me.
Yeah. And so I volunteered for flying training, and I eventually got onto flying training. They wanted me to be an observer to start with, because being an engineer I knew all about vectors. And I stuck it out eventually, and got trained as a pilot. I qualified by December 1940, and was sent to Crail, as I mentioned, for deck landing training.
So that was for the specialist training?
Yes, that was for specialist training.
And previously to that, do you have, I suppose it's called non-flying training, so a classroom training?
Oh, yes, indeed. Whilst we were at St. Vincent, before we went onto flying training, we had classroom training there. Can I tell you a funny little bit again? It was, we were all lined up in front of the NCOs, and the NCOs were fairly middle-aged men. They treated us very well, And one particular NCO stood in front of us and said, "I'm told that you lot are the cream of British youth. As far as I'm concerned, the cream has gone sour." And then, of course, he went on in the usual way. But they were terribly good to us. They were like fathers to us. And we passed out from St. Vincent, and I then went to Netheravon for my flying training, which I completed there. The instructors there were marvellous people. And
did you have any particular problems that you had there, or was it fairly...
No, I took to it fairly well, although Lillian will tell you that she witnessed me. We were all in what was called the advanced section, and we were all going off to do dive bombing, and it was a matter of a race to get into the air between us. You know, we were, as pilots, we were all friends, and it was a bit of a race. And as we got the signal to go, it was sort of open up, stick forward to bring the tail up, and get to take off. Well, of course, I stuck the stick too far forward. My aircraft rushed forward, dug its nose into the deck,
in the
cabbage field, and of course didn't do the engine or the propeller any good. Lillian, my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, witnessed this. And I was then up before the chief instructor, but fortunately, because of my previous history under training, I was just given a reprimand, and it was recorded in my logbook. But but I still went on and to finish my training.
But the farmer wasn't very pleased. No.
Yes. Yes.
And then stuck, you know, up in the air like this. And I was expecting, you know, any moment something to tip out, but you didn't.
After all the hours of training you've done as well.
Yes. Anyway, following that...
can I just ask, did they teach you any special sort of techniques for how to abandon an aircraft?
Yes, we were taught how to leave the aircraft, and we, in those days, we would be strapped to our parachute seats, and we would leave the aircraft, and hopefully get clear of the aircraft, and then open your parachute. And we were given parachute instruction, by the way, on the ground. To help with this, but apart from that, no, it was a matter of common sense and get on with it, you see.
You never had to do it as well.
I never bailed out. No, I always managed to crash land.
Mm-hmm.
And
it does sound like you did that more than once, the way you put that.
Yes.
Ultimately, he was testing planes at Mac.
Yes. Yes, I suppose they did, because they, the instructors, when you were under instruction, talked to you about crash landing, and I always remember them telling me, you know, not to crash land on the runway, always do it alongside on the grass. But the runway was always very attractive, you see. Anyway, from there... at Netheravon, I went up to Crail, and at Crail I flew saltfish and albacores. During my training, I was flying Magisters until I then went to advanced training, when I flew the Hart and the Audax. They were still biplanes, but they were Hawker aircraft.
Did they have, obviously had different characteristics?
Oh yes, you had an instructor, and when you got into the aircraft, you first flew with an instructor, and you went through all the motions, and you know you were left at the controls with the instructor off the controls.
But I suppose it's a bit like different types of sports cars.
Yes, they were.
A bit loud or
a bit different. That's right. Yes, yes.
So which one do you prefer at that stage?
I suspect I preferred the Hind and the Audax to the Hart. The Hind had a bit more sort of oomph, and the Audax was definitely superior to the Hart.
But technically speaking, they were pretty
very similar. Oh, they were, yes, very similar biplanes. Yes, yeah, yeah. then of course I got onto the Swordfish. Now I'll tell you another funny little story. I was sharing a Swordfish with SMP Walsh, who I said became quite a hero. And I was in the rear cockpit. Sorry, I was in the front cockpit flying, and he was in the rear cockpit. And we decided to change over. So we changed over in the air. I got out of the cockpit, went forward, holding onto the upper wing. Sam clambered out of the rear cockpit, slid himself into the front cockpit. I then went back and slid myself into the rear cockpit. Now, I don't think we could do this on any aircraft other than the Swordfish. It didn't really need to have a pilot, the Swordfish, it just flew itself. But I thought I'd mention that. Do you remember that, love, that incident?
Mm.
Yes, vaguely, yes.
That was, strictly speaking, allowed? Or?
No, not allowed. Strictly not allowed. But there you are. What were we? We were young men, 22 years old. Old men at 23. So
you didn't really have any feeling of fear to even try something like that?
No. It was all exciting. I mean, even when we... I'm going to be a bit rude here. I was being attacking a German supply ship in the Gulf, and I did the usual technique of going from bow to stern, and there was a lot of stuff coming up around me. It was tracer, actually. But I hadn't experienced it before, and I used to talk to myself, I must admit, and I'm looking at all this lot and I'm saying, what's all this bloody lot? I didn't realise, I mean, there were all these lights going on around me, you see, and I thought, you know, what's all this? It just shows you how naive we were as young men. It was quite incredible. But that's just one little incident. Yes, I learned very quickly.
So your initial reactions to being in combat were very different from your later reactions. It's very exciting, first of all. And you didn't really
but later reactions, a terrible thing to say, never bothered me at all. It's so to this point. I'm going to tell. This is going on a bit more, and. I was in North Africa, and we were experiencing a lot of engine failures with Albacore aircraft, and it was essential for us to get to the bottom of this. And an aircraft had been landed between the German lines and our lines, and Albacore, due to engine failure, and the pilot had managed to get back to our lines. And I've got a photograph of this too, once we got it back. And I went out to get this aircraft back. And we were between the German lines and our lines, and I eventually pulled it back, and we were being strafed by German aircraft, and we left the aircraft out in the open, and there were some slit trenches, I suppose about possibly 100 yards away, and I had this lovely ground crew, a couple of senior NCOs, and some men, and they all got down in the slit trench. Now, I was a young sub-lieutenant, and I thought, wisely or unwisely, that I shouldn't show that I was afraid. So I stood up on the ground. I didn't get down in the trench. And the German aircraft was strafing, and this lovely flight sergeant, he got an MM later on, looked up at me, and he said, very, very expressively, "Sir, get down in the bloody trench, sir." So sir got down in the bloody trench. Which was rather interesting, wasn't it?
So was there a sort of, after a while, was there a feeling of sort of indestructibility, that if it, you hadn't bought it by now, then you weren't going to...
I think you're absolutely right there. It was that feeling that, you know, you weren't going to be killed or hurt in any way. But it was endemic among the young men. I mean, they never thought they were going to be killed. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been doing what they were doing. They were flying and in combat. But, you know, that's just another little funny incident. And...
I pulled you off on a tangent just as you were getting to... you've been to Netheravon and you were heading up to Scotland, was it?
Yes, to Crail. And Lillian came up to me, and we were married in Crail, you see. So we're a little nostalgic about Crail. We're still in touch with a couple of ladies up there, aren't we?
Mm.
Yes,
mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's beside the point.
Well, it's all part of
our
life.
Of it.
Yes, 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 yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
so how did you organise leave? Did you have a 24-hour leave or something just to get married? Or?
Oh, no. No.
Working holiday. So I travelled up in the most awful snowstorm with a train packed with Polish soldiers.
Yep.
Freezing, no heat, no light half the time. Excuse me, I've got a tickly throat. And finally we got there, or I got to Montrose and had to change. I finally arrived in the early hours of the morning, feeling so cold and dead. He met me and took me back to the flat that he'd managed to get for us, and said, "Sorry, can't stop, I'm on duty." Shot off and left me.
Yes, yes, I wasn't supposed to be out, actually. Lillian's father gave her the fare to come up, so I always think of that as the... Anyway, we were married in Crail.
It was terribly funny. Very quickly, he made all the arrangements for us to be married in the church, and Sam Walsh was going to be the best man. What a best man.
Yes.
And the morning we were due to meet up at the church, all very white, not white, but you know, all very ordinary clothing, no coupons. And we were met by the, I think what they called the padre now.
Well, he was
the local
clergyman.
His housekeeper met us and she said, "Will you come back to the manse?" "Oh, the vicar's not very well." And so we looked at one another and said, "Oh God, you know, now what?" And we rushed back to the manse and we were taken into the study. Best man and two other chaps came in with us, you know, we were all looking at one another. Tiny little room with a mean fire just burning. And the next moment, this poor old boy came in, his dressing gown, scarf round his neck, bedroom slippers, very snuffly. "I'm sorry, I've got a cold, but let's get this over quickly."
And he
stood in front of the fire and made our responses.
Promptly married us, you see. So.
Yes. And my older daughter reckons that we weren't married properly.
But funnily enough, the two of his daughters are still alive, aren't they?
Yes.
And their mother used to act as the registrar, and she actually wrote out our marriage certificate. Mm-hmm. And they, I think somehow,
diverging.
Well, this is all part of it. And they've had a copy of the marriage certificate and recognised their mother's handwriting. And funnily enough, every now and again we are in touch with them up in Crail.
Mm-hmm.
They're two old ladies
they
now.
They feel they more or less
own us. Yes, yeah.
Part of old Crail.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's that.
So you were allowed time off in your lunch hour or something to go get married?
I wasn't allowed any time off, but my chums stood in for me at the air station so that I could slip away, get married, and go back again. And that was it.
There was no marriage allowance,
was there? Oh, God, no. Because you didn't 25 years old in those days before you got married, marriage allowance.
You weren't allowed to be married, you see.
Yeah.
You weren't meant to be married.
Well, the CEO of that squadron thought it was terrible that I'd got married. You know, he was against it. But there you are. That was the old-fashioned Navy.
Yeah.
Right, well, that was Crail.
So what were you actually doing on the technical side in Crail? It was land.
Yes, we were doing what was called dummy deck landings to train us so that we could go to a carrier. And then from there, I was posted to the Mediterranean.
So how did you learn to land on decks?
Oh.
Is there a certain technique that you...
Well, yes, there was a definite small area marked out on which you had to be able to place your aircraft in the correct landing position to pick up a wire. You know, and they had wires on the deck, and you had to land so that you picked up a wire. And
the batting technique was totally different to what it is today.
Oh yeah, yes.
It was like two baseball bats.
Yeah. Oh.
Baseball, you know, ping pong. Just two little white bats that you know would wave.
Oh yes,
sideways or left
so
down.
You were coming in at what sort of speed? And how were you stopping?
About
on
the old Sawfish and the Albacore, you came in at about 60, 65 knots, and there was no problem of stopping and picking up the wire at that sort of speed, none at all. I used to come in, and most of us did, plenty of engine on, hooked down. Aircraft in a landing attitude, nose up, and you'd pick up a wire. Either we didn't like picking up the first wire. We always aimed to pick up the second wire if we could, so that you just stopped before the barrier, and the barrier was dropped down, and they unhooked you, and you just taxied forward. You see. I never got any whiplash. I don't remember anybody getting that. The only time people used to get something like that was when they were doing accelerated takeoffs, you know, some people did if they didn't put their head back properly against the pad. But no, you know, I never got anything like that at all.
Did you ever have any trouble with deck landing?
No, none whatsoever. I used to boast, terrible thing to boast like this, I used to boast I could land on a sixpence, but there we are.
You look fairly accurate.
Yeah.
A couple of years back, he had an opportunity to fly on one of those, what do you call them?
Simulators?
No.
You learn to fly, but it's inland. You know, you go to a, and you sit in the cockpit.
Oh yes, a simulator, flight simulator.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
And he was supposed to be flying with Concorde.
Oh yes, you're talking about after the war now.
I'm talking just saying now, today, she's turned 17 and goes down into the simulator and finds the Concorde.
Yes, that's right.
And the chap with him said, and who said we need to lengthen the runways?
Yes.
So when he came out, the head was three times
so you can land Concorde.
Yes. I apparently flew the damn thing under a bridge at, can't remember where now, but you know, this was simulation.
That's
but
just an aside.
Yeah. So it's a series of skills that never really leaves you.
Mm.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I keep boasting to my one of my daughters, who my oldest daughter is always talking about this,